Welcome to Transformation with Martinet. Martinet Emmons is a transformational life coach who broke free from childhood abuse, sexual trauma, and overcame cancer to become a powerful force of healing and hope for others. Martinet describes traumatic events as fierce emotional tsunamis. They can leave impending doom and destructive tidal waves of emotions that hit you when you least expect it. Martinet helps her clients dive into the depths of their trauma and pain as she stands fiercely advocating for them to shine a light on those experiences and find the lesson in the pain. She serves as a beacon of hope that guides you to see the strength, lessons, and purpose that can be born from the pain. You can feel alive with purpose again when you awaken your dormant strength. Step into your power with a sense of peace and discover a new wave of hope with the right tools and support. Martinet and her guests are here shining their lights today through empowering stories of hardship and transformation to inspire you to find hope and to see that there is a beautiful blue ocean of serenity, happiness, and fulfillment in your future. Transformation with Martinet starts now.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Transformation with Martinet. This is where we conquer everything and compromise nothing. Today's a really fun show. This is a real vulnerable, raw conversation wherever we want to go in transformation. One of my guests today, Peggy Wilms, she put together a book thing, and she's the author and we are contributors, and we've just all got stories that we thought we would share with y'all today. So without further ado, I want to welcome my guest, Peggy Wilms, my wonderful friend and leader here of this book, my new friend, Andy Scarantino, and my longtime, been through all the training together, Alicia Lyons. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi, Martinet. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hi, Alicia.
They're my favorite people, some of my favorite people on the planet. So oh, yeah. I'm excited.
So lucky.
Such a good group. We've all been together before too. Like on a Zoom, just not on a show.
Yeah. We're still alive. It's because we're Wonder Women.
We are. And if I was a coffee drinker, I would have some really cool mugs, but I'm not. But I guess I could get some cool mugs and just put my caffeine in there, right?
Yes, you got to fake it. You got to join the friends. Come to the central perk.
Oh, that's it. I guess that's what I need to do. Yeah. So should we share some of our stories a little bit from the book, or how do you want to start?
Sure.
I'm open.
I think, first of all, I just want to say thank you for, we have been together. I mean, Andy said it perfectly, but thank you so much, you guys, for being part of the book. I happen to have it here. So it's called The Fourfold Formula for All Things Wellness. And Andy, you know, this is your show, so you get to do whatever you want. I just wanted to thank you guys for being part of it is all I have to say. We had 40 people write stories for this book, and holding your stories, which are true and authentic and real, was honestly life-changing for me. So the three of you, I just want to say thank you. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. It was an honor and pleasure and something that put me more out of my comfort zone than I thought, because my stories are my stories and I've had them for my entire life. But when you actually put it out and think, oh, shoot, a lot of people are going to be reading this. Wow. So I know that was a number on me. I don't know about you guys, Andy and Alicia.
Go ahead, Asia. I'd say that this is the first time that I've shared my particular story, just because I had the story of, you know, I'm not allowed to say anything that could be perceived as negative towards my dad. And so there's a lot of like, it was okay to tell the story, but now telling people that the story exists is two different things. And so, I would say that it was raw. It was the first time. I didn't know I would talk about my dad. I didn't know that this was the story I was going to tell. And, it was definitely, an interesting and different experience for me.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit while we're here. Tell us a little bit about that, about your story with your dad.
Yeah. So it's interesting. The day that I met Peggy was the day that my dad passed away.
Yes.
And I had had, my voice is going out. I had had a very long journey with learning. Number one, learning my dad didn't love me, and then unlearning that. And because when I was younger, before I had decided he didn't love me, I knew he did. So mm-hmm. I learned it, I unlearned it, and then I learned it again.
Yeah.
And it's really truly thanks to hiring a personal coach. Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't hire a personal coach because I felt like my dad didn't love me and that's my issue. And if you could fix that, then my life would be better. It was like, I have a business and it's my business isn't doing what I want it to do. So I need some help with that. And then never talked about my business. It was always about me and the stuff going on in my life. And the thing that changed everything for me was that my coach said, I have a lot of evidence that my dad didn't love me. And she encouraged me to go look for the evidence that did. And the beautiful thing was that I was opened up to so many memories that had been distorted or deleted altogether that I didn't have access to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the best thing for me in all of that healing is that now it goes through to my son because he's able to say to me, Mom, how come you don't smile at me? You smile at everybody else. Why don't you not smile at me? Mm. Like this happened yesterday.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like a dagger in the heart.
I feel it myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the same time, like I got to be, I know myself well enough that I got to explain to him, well, number one, I'm a really good faker of being happy. Like mm-hmm. I am happy right now, but I cried like literally 5 minutes ago, there were tears streaming down my face, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't know if I didn't tell you that.
Right.
No?
earn an Emmy.
Right.
Yeah.
I should have been an actress, you know? But my son and I have a different relationship because of the relationship I had with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I told my dad, I don't feel like you're not around anymore. I miss you. I miss spending time with you. And he ignored that outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And because he did, I never will ignore that outreach for my
mm-hmm.
son.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm a coach, I can explain things that I wouldn't be able to explain otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that to say that this whole journey has been an amazing blessing. And one of the phrases that I said at the very beginning of the pandemic was, I want to be in a position to say, I'm so glad I did, instead of I wish I had.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been my coaching journey. I'm so glad I did, instead of I wish I had, because I wouldn't be sitting here right now had I not been in the coaching mm-hmm. situations that I've been in, because I wouldn't have talked to Peggy that day.
Right.
I wouldn't have written the story that I wrote. You know, it's just, I'm so glad I did.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's really awesome. You know,
it's like I've watched your parenting through your stories. That's holding you guys' stories and then pulling a little bit more out of you made me jump into your memories. Like I jumped into 40 family trees and 40 family memory albums and was able to see and feel and touch and look at the colors of all the stories. And then to watch you evolve, it sounds crazy, but I feel like the mama bear, because to watch you evolve 10 months after the project started, or 8 or 7 from when I met you. Mm-hmm. Alicia, watching you, watching your social media posts, watching how Xander's a part of your life, it is doing more than I think you realize. Social media, we sit back and we look for emojis and posts and all those things. And I really want you to hear that. And I'm one of them that watches you all the time. And I don't necessarily go thumbs up or good job, but I watch what you put about Xander every day. Every single day, you can quiz me. His word today on something I had to look up about how something kills something. So the way you are parenting, I loved watching you evolve with your story. So I just want you to know. And all of you, I mean, Martinetti even, my gosh. I mean, it's just been just a God. So proud of you guys. These stories are tough. You know,
they are.
Before you guys, I just want to say that people don't think they have anything to share. And it's such a disservice as a human being to think walking the planet doesn't give us the right to tell our own stories and change and save lives. I mean, it's a disservice to keep that beautiful information to yourself, no matter how ugly, gross, bleeding, addictions, murder, it doesn't matter what it is. I'll sit down with a felon and listen to the stories. We're human beings. And so anyone listening to your show today, Martinet, I just really challenge them that sharing is caring and, you know, let go and the stories will flow.
You know, that reminds me, I saw this video. I was just doing a little surfing yesterday because I felt like it. It was the end of the day. And this guy, he's talking, and his hair is kind of a mess. And he's like, so life, he says, my hair is a fucked up mess and so am I. Oh, well, it gives me all kinds of stories to share. And I'm like, you know, that is true because we all have something, whether we think it's worthwhile or not, you know? And like you were saying, sometimes like you're, you know, scrolling through all of our social media or whatever, and you may not comment on it. And that's a lot of it is with clients that we have or our community. It's like, oh, I've been following you for years, but I've never said it. You know, it's just powerful what we can actually put out there and who's going to see it and who it might touch. Well, we have no idea until like maybe a year or two or more later. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of want to interject on that, Martinet, because I think a lot about when I tell stories, it doesn't, I might be an anomaly, but like, I just don't really give a shit. Like I just say whatever I feel like on the internet. And it kind of all started because I'm of that weird generation where I grew up without the internet, but I came of age with it. And I grew up in a family unit where my voice was kind of like, you know, it wasn't that I was told to shut up because that was impossible. Like I would never have shut up. But that it wasn't really validated by them or what I was saying. So I would just kind of turn to LiveJournal, Zanga, MySpace blogs, like all of these things. And I just started writing for the void of whatever, blogger. And I got a lot out of that. And now I'm in practice to tell stories. And the book was different because, oh shit, this is a book. Like people are going to actually turn these pages. This is a book. It's published. It's not something that I can delete. It's not something that I can take away. Not that I have a habit of doing that. But because I have a lot of years just telling stories, what I've kind of figured out, and I think Peggy, you might be on board with this, but I don't want to speak for you, is that we're not really telling the story of me. We're telling the story of us. So like you said about how you're jumping into 40 family trees, like it's not just about what happened to you. It's the story of us, the human condition. Like we're talking about the things that are of the human condition. And even if you're not, even if you haven't had the specific experience, like I didn't have the experience of going through a hurricane that just happened, like you, Peggy, in Florida. I don't have the experience of being a parent, but I have the human experience, the human emotions, the human feelings, the humanity aspect, which correlates. So when I read something that Alicia writes or Peggy writes or you, Martinet, when any of you writing something, anything, it's not the story of, it helps us understand our own experience more. And I think a lot of people get trapped in the ego and they get the, oh my God, but my personal details. It's like, I'm not to be an asshole here, but no one even really cares about your personal details. Like they want to just see their humanity in your story. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of where I, where it hits for me.
Well, you know, when we first start, when we're babies in the womb and our parents start reading to us, it's like, it's always stories about everything else. It's about animals and feelings and a tree and ABCD. So we all connect off these subjects. Mm-hmm. And then as we get older, we're doing writing for academic purposes. Like, here's mm-hmm. a subject about history in Alabama, go write it and you go do it. And then mm-hmm. later in life, when we're in our 30s, 40s, and 50s, everybody keeps saying, journal, journal. And to, you know, it goes to this whole other spectrum of like, what's inside? And not that doesn't resonate with a lot of people, journaling. But mm-hmm. if you think back of when we were little kids, it's all about subjects. What mm-hmm. happened in a hurricane? What happened with a bear? What happened with children? And you don't have to have any connection with, did I see a bear or did I go through a hurricane? It's that empathy. It's that human being that you said, Andy, that can step into that situation and feel those adjectives, mm-hmm. those words that bring it out. And, you know, when people first started writing for this book, it was my, just like you said, I don't think you're an anomaly. I think you're an anomaly in that you're only 2% of the population that'll say what you feel. But when people first started writing it, I think they were just like, oh, what can I pull out of my journal that I can get off my chest? As the process started going, then I think we went, hopefully some of the authors were able to go, oh, wow, someone could be sitting on a couch who was about ready to hurt themselves or know someone or lost their uncle to suicide. And that whole spiderweb connection may have absolutely nothing to do with you, but mm-hmm. man, it's like our social media. We don't know what people are reading. I'll just say one more thing and then I'll shut up. This hurricane changed my life. And it isn't because it changed my life because I can say, oh, I lived through 155 miles an hour. It changed my life because the animals changed, the people changed, the places changed. I changed as a human being. You know, and I'm just going to say it public because I haven't before. And I'm going to keep my damn tissues right here. You might need them, bitch. But I've helped tens of thousands of people. Like, I could give you emails for 33 years all day long. When this hurricane happened, I sat outside after a week and I counted 27 names that reached out, 27 people. So I sat there and I had a really long meeting with myself. And I said, what did I do? What can I own? What did I do to create this situation to teach people how to treat me? Right? I'm strong. I say I'm strong. I solve everything. I'm the fixer. I take care of the family. I'm like this badass broad. I taught them this because they're sitting back going, it's a hurricane. She's going to be fine. Right. Mm. And so my point is that we sit back and if I didn't say what I just said right now to humanize myself to you, which is very transparent and authentic and not fun, hopefully next time the three of you and your listeners will think, you know what? If I know a tough broad in my life, doesn't mean she can always make it through every damn thing. Mm-hmm. And just mm-hmm. saying hi to her might make a freaking ass difference.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of my former sister-in-law. She said that, and she was tough, just her work, how she presented herself. And she said, whenever she made the drive from Oregon to Nevada, which is where we were at the time, she said she cried the whole way. That was the only time she let herself have just peace or, you know, to let go of everything. Otherwise she was just, and she had to be tough. So yeah, that's, and I, you know, it just happened to one of those rare moments that we talked that she actually told me that. She doesn't usually tell anybody stuff like that. Right. So, yeah.
Well, and it's like one of the stories in the book, I can't even remember which one that I wrote. You know, I talked about being on so many different medications as everybody tried to label me and figure out, you know, what's wrong with me. And I really have just been addicted to mania my whole life, to be honest, other than coffee. But it's that perfectionism syndrome that mm-hmm. firstborns typically, you know, you have parents who are baby boomers and, you know, how that story goes. But you don't know what someone's mental health is. I mean, I have three tattoos that tell my story, but if I don't see you guys in person, you know, you don't know that. If somebody doesn't read the book, they wouldn't know that. And as a coach, like the three of you are, and any of your coaches that are listening, we have such a fine line to walk because we want to act like we are intelligent and we're certified and we have the ability to help you. Mm-hmm. And then there's a fine line of going, hey, I'm a shit show. you know, I don't know if I can make it. It's a very fine line to be able to, but once you get to the place where it's not your first or second or 10th year of coaching and you can say, look, I earned my stripes, shut up. I feel like my stories in the last 4 years, I don't care. Did I up till then? Mm-hmm. And you know, you guys are a lot younger than me and I would encourage you to be as transparent as possible because that's human. You're going to get 5,000 more clients.
Yeah. Peggy, I relate to that. I just had a conversation with my group Saturday and I said this exact words. I said, you know, as a leader, you juggle the vulnerability aspect a lot because you have to show up as a leader. And then what's the fine line of vulnerability? Like how much vulnerability do you allow through? And so, you know, just full transparency. I was like, you know, I left my jobs last November. Like this has been the hardest year I've had of my life since I was 21 years old. And, you know, that's hard to say to people that are paying you money. Hey, I had a hard time with money this year, but what are you going to fucking do? Like, right. I'm not going to pretend that the journey for anyone is easy because it's not mm-hmm. for anything. Like I have the story of the getting sober and the losing all the weight and becoming a marathon runner and becoming all of the, I have those stories. And I'm not going to say, because I think that the paradigm is shifting in our society between, hey, I did it. And here's five easy steps of how you can do it too.
Absolutely.
It's Amen. Fucking, that's why all these people, and I'm just going to say, all these people are changing their Instagram handles from their businesses to their names. It's been happening. It just happened with somebody that I follow just this past week. There was because, you know, and I don't know why this person did it. But they did, but it was big enough for them to do it that they made a post about it. And it's because we're switching from the putting it on to the authenticity, to the vulnerability, mm-hmm. to the, hey, it's not easy as five steps. And you know, when you want to make a change, good for you. And we're here and we're going to guide you and we're going to help you. And also it's hard as fuck. And that's right. it. Mm-hmm. And we're human and things are hard and you hold space for people and you have capacity and it's there. And sometimes it collapses and sometimes you got to cancel a meeting. Sometimes you have to take a mental health day. That's just part of it. And like, sorry, like that's part yeah. of it.
Oh, I agree. I
part used of being to alive.
Worry. Yeah. I used to worry a lot about, you know, cause this say you don't want somebody to think that, you know, you can't teach them or show them or, you know, whatever the case, but as we are taught in our community anyway, is that, you know, you just have to be one step above to be able to help somebody else. You know, on the those little steps, one ahead to be able to help. I always keep in my mind, I don't know what age my mom was. I really can't think of what it was, but I was probably 15-ish, something like that. And being in a restaurant with my mom, she was probably, oh, I don't know. Doesn't matter really. But this waitress was rude. She was. And she just walked away and my mom got up and followed her and she let her have it. And that was like one of those things where my mom was like the most the nicest, cuddly, everybody's mom, but she'd had it. And that was in my mind. I'm like, okay. And when I hit 40, there's something in me that shifted. It was like, you know what?
Just
I'm
wait.
Not going to put up with that. Yeah, I'm not going to put up with that. And this is real life. I'm not always going to be perfect. None of us are perfect. I'm never perfect. And I have some entrepreneurial friends that are, you know, 8-figure owners and up, and they're very vulnerable about their business, about their personal life, about their relationship, about all of it. And I figure if somebody like that, who's been in the trenches even longer than me, then yeah, it's okay. I'm just going to be me, and the people that are going to come to me are going to come to me, and those that don't, that's fine. You know, it's so freeing when you get to that point.
Well, when we've got a resume of life, we spend all of our damn life worrying about our business resume and our, you know, mm-hmm. from the second we get out of school, it's like, oh, you know, do you have a bachelor's? What are your acronyms after your name? Blah, 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 blah. Make the business card as big as possible.
Yeah.
And we have a resume of life. I mean, if you put acronyms after all the crap that we've been through of everything, and it doesn't matter whether you've been a mom or married or a dog owner, but yeah. I think it's our responsibility to share the resume. That's where the secret sauce is, and getting close as humankind is connecting on the stuff that makes us all breathe every day. I mean, come on, look at the list of what it would be like. We all have a mother and father. Let's start there. Whether we know them or not, or we're adopted. That's why we're talking. There's so many subjects we're alike.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't relate to Alicia's story in the sense of like my father's love, because guess what? He doesn't want to meet me. So I've never met him. But guess what? I I can connect on still on the same exact subject.
Yeah, I would say that a post of mine that I created recently has gotten the most shares and likes and comments of any post that was content related. I work with moms, and my post said that I yell at my kids sometimes and I'm still a good mom. Mm-hmm. And the amount of people that touched is significantly more than any other post that I've created anywhere similar. And it was the most raw thing that I've ever posted, because mm-hmm. I've always been praised for how calm I am with my son. And I'm super calm with my son if somebody's watching me, because mm-hmm. I'm a good faker. And when it's just me and him, or it's me, him, and the dogs and the boyfriend are at home, a different side comes out. And I'm not saying that's 24/7. It's once a week, maybe. But in that moment, I was feeling bad because I yelled at him for something that he didn't even do. And yeah, there's a little bit of pregnancy hormones that are creating some of that, but it like made me feel so bad that I was able to really connect with what a yelling mom experiences. Mm-hmm. Because we all do it. I don't know a single mom that's never yelled at her kid.
Me neither.
But we all feel like fucking failures mm-hmm. every time we yell. Mm-hmm. And this morning I yelled at somebody else. I yelled at the dog because she destroyed some of my stuff and I was not very happy with that.
Right.
And, you know, I told Xander, I wanted him to see me angry at someone else, because I don't really get angry at a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted him to see that. And I said, in this moment, I want to give that dog back. And I'm very angry at them mm-hmm. and et cetera, et cetera. And within like, I don't know, 5 minutes, I had calmed down. And he's been asking me for at least a month, how do I shift my mood? Because it takes him 20, 30 minutes to get out of a bad mood. It takes me about maybe 5. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for so long that I don't have any clue how I do it. And then this morning I realized, well, this thought of the dog tore up my stuff made me mad. This thought of the dog doesn't know what stuff she's allowed to chew on made me feel compassionate for her.
Yeah.
And now I get to teach her something.
Right.
And so I told Xander, that's how I shift my mood. I have a thought that makes me mad. I have a second thought that makes me not mad. Mm-hmm. Usually makes me more compassionate.
And that's good.
And he, like I said, he's been asking me for a month because he loses his mind with his video game. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't play video games. I have no idea how to shift your mood. Go take a break. I don't want to take a break. Well, I don't know. That's all I know. Mm-hmm. That's another way I shift my mood, is I take a break.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, and I'm going to go live in my Facebook group later to explain all that, because I know that there's a lot of people out there that don't know how to shift their mood, mm-hmm. don't feel in control of their emotions in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know where I'm going with this. So
somebody can jump in. Well, it was a good, you know, it was a good story.
I mean, where is that second book we're recruiting for? I already have your story, though. That's a good one for the third book. Yeah, wow, that's good.
Those little lessons. A good story.
It is a good story.
And important to share, Amandy, because it's like, yeah, we're sitting here listening, but if she didn't say, I mean, accolades to you that you're going to go live and share it. We can't level up if we don't make space and level up and get rid of this stuff, the old stuff where we wouldn't tell anybody stuff and we were ashamed and we thought no one cares about you. Like, you're not that unique that people are sitting around waking up in the morning going, oh my God, what's Peggy doing today? Like, get up off yourself. Just go on with life. You're not that special. I don't have time to sit here and worry about everybody else. Like, just do the right thing. Wake up, lead from your heart, and try your best to just do the right thing and share what you learn. I mean, unless Jesus is coming back in all of us, I think we're making mistakes every hour. Like, I really do. And so,
100%. Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, I was just going to go back to stories and the idea of what Peggy was saying about share what you learn. And, you know, I was thinking about like telling a good story and the idea that, you know, before I talked about the story of us and I said, you know, when you tell a story, nobody cares what you were wearing unless a bird shit on you.
Yeah.
Like, I say this all the time. I say this in, I've said this in many interviews and it's because people really are just wanting to feel the emotion and the connection. So they don't really care about your blue shirt, my uniform. You know, they don't care about it, but they do care about the feeling of embarrassment when a bird shits on you. And then that they kind of connect with that. So it's important to, like, when you're talking about the story of telling, you know, talking in your group to the moms and like what they're, and they're going to relate and they're going to relate to that emotion. And it is not going to be about you. You won't even be you're not even a thought. Like, and when we can kind of disconnect from this ego driven, like, I am important. Do you guys know Wayne Dyer, rule number 6? Don't take yourself so goddamn seriously.
Yeah.
Like this idea that I am important. I am, you know, I am someone that you're not even, you are just a conduit for Tao, for the universe, for Brahman, God, whatever you believe in, you know, you're a conduit. Like I have and when we can kind of take ourselves out of the position of actor and just realize we're a conduit, it takes a lot of the pressure off. Yeah. I had a woman reach out to me just this last, it's not random. She's been following me for quite some time and we're going to be having a meeting this week. And I have an idea of what some of the stuff that's going on with her, you know, her personally. And it's so interesting because my algorithms have been serving me up specific stuff in this area. And not at like somebody that I used to follow has resurfaced recently that speaks on this particular area, for example. And my algorithms are just kind of serving a lot of this up for me. And we're having this meeting in a couple of days. And I think, yeah, I'm in a good position to help her, but I know that this is all very divinely guided. And I know that while I am the conduit of the human that's going to be helping this particular person, it isn't really me. It's all being given to me. Like it's all just being sort of served up for me. And here it is. And you're just the medium. You're just the medium that is going to help this other human. And that's kind of how I've viewed everything from the beginning up until now. And taking my ego out of it makes it so much easier to just kind of show up on an interview like this and just say whatever the hell I want, because it doesn't really matter, because it's going to help somebody.
Cracks me up about algorithms. It's just a new buzzword for like whatever. Algorithms, they've been happening since we were little. And serendipity, we create it. And algorithms are based off of what? Doing the same thing over and over and feeding you the same thing that you're talking about in that moment. So writing. If it was 1977 and I was writing a book, I'm going to go to a support group or talk to these people or become, oh my God, all of a sudden they're in my algorithm. That it existed back then. But now it's on a platform that is exponentially expanding so much. We sit back and we're going, oh my God, no, that means you as the driver are doing something right. Your message is out there and the algorithm is finding you. And to me, that means you're aligned with your purpose and passion and you better use it and level up or change your damn algorithm. It's nobody else's fault that these people are finding you, Andy. It means right now, or you are putting out some sort of beacon or light or unintentional purpose here to serve that niche. And that's why it pisses me off, these scientists who sit back and try to discover these algorithms and figure it out and do TikToks all day. Like, I've discovered it. Like, peeps, you have 5,000 followers. Like, don't waste my 30 seconds. You haven't figured out the algorithm. It's sit back and let it happen. And what you had said, Andy, it made me think of like insert subject. Because if we can use our, you know, shit on a shirt, whatever it is, the feelings that come from it, you can insert whatever the subject is. Phone. Oh my God, when I was in the ocean and I had this brand new phone and I just ran into my boyfriend from 90, and all of a sudden everybody's so invested in the who, what, why, where, and when. It's not the phone. It's not the tissue. And we're all storytellers. And that's what a project like this or a community or friendships, when we go have coffee, doesn't mean we're all divorced. Doesn't mean we all have a, you know, a dog. We're feeding off this, like, you know.
Yeah.
Where's my gavel when I need it?
Oh, so true. I love it. I love it.
So true.
There was one morning I texted Andy and I said, you know, I think that this creative constipation that I'm feeling is because I'm following the wrong people on social media. Because I woke up at 5 a.m. one day, opened my Facebook, which I usually don't do, but I started scrolling and I saw someone say something mom related. And I read the post and I was like, oh, well, you're experiencing this because you're not doing this. And I wrote a blog about it. And I was like, oh, I'm just like, not, there's the wrong people in my algorithm right now. Like, there's it. If I had different people in my algorithm, then I would have different inspiration.
Yeah. And Peggy's right in that we create that, because I noticed, like, I've worked with a couple of clients who will all of a sudden after working with me, send me Instagram posts that they've seen that were related to things we've talked about in our conversations. And they're like, this is really freaky. We just talked about this. And I'm like, no, this is because you are changing. So you're attracting different things to you and you are responsible. It's like one big, and Peggy, you're totally right in the fact that it's just based off of our reticular activating system. Like, yeah, sure. These are numbers and figures and it's a whole other world. And it's, you know, zeros and ones and whatever the fuck, but it's just our reticular activating system. We see more of what we focus on. So, absolutely. You know, if you're 1,000%, so Alicia, if you don't like your algorithm, then don't engage with content of people you don't like, and it'll just be weeded out. I don't even delete people.
Yeah. Just like seventh grade. If you don't like them, go to the other side of the, you know, the playground. Exactly. Yeah. Well, why are you hanging out with them?
So right now, the world is filled with a bunch of people that are unsuccessful. Great. Stop following the unsuccessful people.
Exactly.
I think the creative constipation, which should be a shirt and all hat and everything, and I will buy everything, including the pencils. Creativity, when it is stifled, even for those people who don't consider that they're right-brained and creative, we all are, whether it's whatever you're doing. When you're constipated, backed up in the world of creativity, that is one of the biggest red flags. And it's more than just go out back and meditate and breathe and do some self-care. It is way look outside of that. That sphere that you're hanging out in is just stomping down. You know, that flow is just not happening. And I think for those of us who write, writer's block. No, it's bigger than writer's block. It's the people that are in your circle. It's that magnified whatever. If I eat sugar all day long, what do I want later? I want sugar.
Yeah.
If I eat fruits and veggies all day long, what do I want? Where's the tzatziki sauce? I'm not looking for a freaking cookie. It's, you know, it's an addiction.
Yeah. Gosh.
I want so more people that are really super cool and smart and nice and empathetic. And that's what I want. And I won't accept anything else. And it was that way, you know, Martinet, when I was pulling together people for the book, it's beyond sharing this book. It's thinking about your own community that I kept saying. I said to Marcus, my co-author, I said to everybody who said, why are you waiting for 30 people? It's your first book. Try 15. I said, no, doing 30. And that's just the way it's going to be. And I don't care if it takes a year, because I'm going to pick like-minded people who have a heart, and I will sit here till they refer their grandmother, their, well, you know, you want all the same people? Yep. Yep. I'd love it if they all knew each other, because that means we all got the same recipe going on, and I'll sit here all day. And that's what I encourage anybody to do in their community, is don't give up and keep looking for your special ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Cookie's not going to rise or whatever it is, but creative constipation. Oh, that's great.
I'm pretty sure I stole that from somebody, but you know,
I don't care. I love it today. Today it's coming from you. Next time I'm interviewed, I'm like, oh, Alicia Lyons once told me. I love it. Alicia, have you noticed Alicia in my gaming chairs? I think I was interviewing or talking to Alicia. I said, oh, I think we're sending the wrong message, because gaming chairs mean like, oh, sit on your ass and play games all day, be comfortable. And I was like, I got this because Dana zoomed it in here and said, here, do you want this chair? But I don't know.
I'm not even sitting in my pink one. Like, that's what I usually sit in on podcasts.
Yeah, they're really cool. They're not even really that comfortable.
No, it's not. That's why I'm sitting in this one.
I think mine's the most comfortable chair. It's not a gaming chair or anything at all, but it's the most, I could sit in it all. Well, I can't sit all day anyway, but I could sit in it all day if I had to.
That's good.
I don't know. Yeah. You got to have a comfy chair. Yeah.
So what do you feel like, Martine, sharing your story? Because you had shared your story before, and obviously it's in a more global, you know, and you can't pull it back. That's what Andy said. That's kind of what the big deal.
Yeah.
What did you feel like? And now you're blogging. All of you guys are blogging, been blogging for a while. But has it taken a different thing? I mean, you have a radio show. You're public. Oh, you know, she must have an easy job with this sharing thing. How was it for you?
Not really.
People would think that about you.
Yeah. No, I did the book, same reason as I did this show, is to get out of my, to get visible and to get out of my comfort zone. Because, you know, I've had a lot of people lately say, well, why aren't you, you know, you're in Lisa's community, you're in Sean's community, why aren't you wanting to speak more? And I said, this is my speaking. I am not somebody who wants to be on a big stage. I could care less about it. I would be up there with someone else and, you know, helping something, but this is my platform. This is what I like to do. And it's kind of the same with the writing. Yeah. My story is out there on my website, but not to the detail. I mean, there's a lot more little fine points stuck in there that, you know, I don't think that you even think about it when you're used to saying the same story to people, sharing your story. But then when you're really putting it on paper and somebody like Awesome You, Peggy, is like, well, you got to be writing your story as someone else is reading it, not you. Like, you got to put all those details, because just like you were sharing a little bit ago about a story that somebody is, you know, I was walking on the beach with my phone and ran into my boyfriend or whatever. Like, everybody wants those little details. Like my sister.
That's why they love romance novels, because that's the most detailed, you know, if you think nobody will admit it half the time, but they start saying it wasn't lavender, it was amethyst. And we're like, oh, you know, and it's a color.
Yeah.
Because you know that that book, that genre is going to be very, you know, explanatory, you know, very detailed. I've even gone on top of what you said, Martina, even deeper. You said, you know, when you write, think about the person that's sitting there and listening or holding the book, and they might save it and share it, and it might save their life. I'm even changing it now where write as if nobody's going to read it. Because that's where it is. Because we won't even journal half the time because we're afraid our kids will find it or something. Oh, should I burn it?
That is so true.
Right. But we want it to go back and look at it so we can sit here and go, man, look at me. Like, I've learned a lot, or I haven't. Right. Every New Year's resolution, we do the same thing. Go back and read it. But we don't even want to put it down. So that's my new thing, is write like nobody's going to read it. I don't even know if I have ever even gotten to that level or considered to before, because it's like, in there, like deep in there, to get that out. But that's what I think we should consider.
You know, that reminds me, I don't know if anybody's seen it, and it was very hard for me to watch. My oldest, she's 24, just turned 24, and she recommended watching The Luckiest Girl in the World. It's on Netflix, just came out.
I just watched it.
Oh man, that's a tough one for me with some of my history. But that was how she finally told her story, was because her editor said, write it like you are writing it for you. Get it out. No one's going to see it.
Yeah.
And yeah, you bringing that up, that is like, that's what's going to be me
they
going
did
forward.
Say it on that movie. Mm-hmm. I swear it was that movie that actually said that. Write your story like nobody. I almost swear, because I just saw it recently.
Yep. I finished it yesterday, the movie. Yeah.
I haven't seen that show, but I've already written the first draft of the piece for the second book. Mm-hmm. And I sat down to write it. And I started writing, and I was not thinking about anybody reading it but Peggy. Uh-huh. And
I loved.
And I was writing. And the more I wrote, the deeper in this emotional hole I was digging myself into. And at one point I stopped and I was like, I don't know how to get out of this hole. Right. And I literally was concerned. Like, I just wrote myself into a hole that I don't know how to get out of. And I ended up pulling myself out of it, but it was interesting to me that, because I basically kept writing, what did I write? That I'm a bad mom. Was that what I kept writing? Yeah.
Over and over, every other.
Over and over. It was like every four sentences, I'm a bad mom. And it was like, the way that I wrote myself out of it was not, okay, I'm a good mom now. It was like, okay, I'm doing okay. All right. I'm doing a little better. Okay. Now I'm doing, you know, it just, because that's more like when you're on that track of negativity, it'll take you down fast. But in order to get out of that negativity, you got to do baby steps.
Well, and what will always pull you out is when you know you can change or save another life. And at the end, so if you think about these 2,000 words, this is what I pray everybody would think about. Whether you're writing or not, think about it just as your day. If you're starting to write a 2,000-word story and you're writing it with the intent of eventually sharing how you came up and out of it a little bit better. You learned a little bit more, some sort of baby little morsel of inspiration and motivation. When you know that, because you guys knew that in this book, that's what this book is about, trials and tribulations of chicken soup of the soul, true stories, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's writing, it's writing, it's writing, it's writing. And at the end, even though if everything's not solved, in 2,000 worlds, you got to kind of act like it's solved. Right? Meaning you got to lift yourself back up somewhat, even though there could be a part 85 of that story. But if you think about your day when you wake up and at the time you go to bed, trying to write that 24 hours so that you inspire someone or you can say something a little bit, it's just chunks of trying to get ourselves out of it. You know, Alicia, what you went through, my sister went through in this book, who wrote a story about her addiction to methamphetamine. And when you guys write stories, and I've said this in interviews you guys have been in before, we can have the exact same event, the exact same people in it. Like, I grew up in the family she did. We were there. Mm-hmm. I went through this methamphetamine. I went through that addiction with her. I went to court to get her kids away from her. I was there in that event. She submits this story to me and I'm sitting here going, are you freaking kidding me? Like, because I never knew her perspective. Once we went through the trial, she became sober. She's an amazing, wonderful human being, 21 years sober, and has just got in a bad spot. We forgot it. We're like, oh my gosh, you came past that. That's past that. What a shitty time that was. You saved yourself. It's over here. We never would have sat down around a table and said, what was your perspective of that? Like, when did that happen? Like, what were you thinking when I went into the courtroom and was sitting there fighting? And I was reading her story and I was like, whoa. And then I was able to say my side of the story to the same thing. And we didn't expect that. So Alicia, she called me the same thing. She dug herself into a hole. 10 o'clock at night, she said, I can't do this. I am not doing this story, this book. And she said, because I forgot this. And now that I said I wanted to do this with you, I am so in this and it is making me sick and disgusted and mad at myself. And I just said, sit in it for a couple of days. Then she came back. And now she's just like, who can I help? What can I do? I want to be in the second book. Like, honestly, so, you know, you guys that are listening, you got to think outside your own.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Your story is for
your
someone
own
else.
Self.
Yes.
That was how I pulled myself out, was like, okay, I'm in this hole. What do I need to hear right now to get out of this hole? Because if I need to hear it, other people are experiencing the same thing. And absolutely, that's what they need to hear too. But so it's in a roundabout way, I was thinking about other people, but in that moment, I was the one in the hole. Exactly. And there was nobody that was throwing a ladder down to me. I had to dig myself out of it. Yeah. And it was like, what do I need to hear right now? I've been telling myself inadvertently, I'm a bad mom. Right. What do I need to hear? I need to hear that I'm a good mom and a great mom, an amazing mom, but I'm not going to hear that right now. I need to hear the next step of, okay, you're not so shitty.
Right.
You know?
And that's like Andy's story, right? So to compare the two of you just real quickly here, when you take somebody through the bad mom story that you're writing right now, and you look at Andy's story that she published through her, you know, her story of sobriety and getting to where she is, when people go through an addiction that sex, drugs, and rock and roll, alcohol, I don't care what the addiction is, it's very step related. Mm-hmm. I did this and this happened. And because of this, then I did this and how I got out of it. And this is what it's very, they can even go down to the dates and 12, 13 in the morning. And this happened as an example, comparatively as a bad mom, it's like, what 5,000 things do you want to hear that make me a bad mom? Like it's not, we can't even pick one thing. It's so much and so heavy, or a bad wife, or whatever we want to label ourselves bad. It's when you come out the other side that you eventually go, why am I hung up on those 43 things? Andy's addiction doesn't identify her. That's not her identity, but her 43 things are different than your 43 things, but you have a million on the other side of it. Mm-hmm. They make you badass. But to pull ourselves out of it, your bad mom is like laying on the couch with cheese fries like Andy's was. Seriously, she couldn't pull herself off the couch with her cheese fries, and you wouldn't have, you know? Hey, man.
I think when you separate yourself and you take yourself out of this, I am, because I am, it communicates intention. And I was not that, and I am not, like, in terms of, like, that's why sobriety is so big for a lot of people, and it's not for me. I don't give a fuck about it, because it's not an I am. Like, it's a thing, sure. It's a thing that happens to, you know, make my life better, but it's not an I am. Like, it's not an identity, and I don't live inside of that identity. And whenever you use I am, you're ascribing things to you. And mm-hmm. that's not you. Like, that might be, you know, something that's passing. And I'm a very big Ram Dass person. And he talks about awareness and allowing a moment to arise and then exist and then change and move along. And like a leaf flying by, like, we don't follow the leaf and try to follow the leaf as far as we could follow the leaf. And then the leaf is still there. Where's the leaf? It's like, you have a thought, I'm a bad mom. Okay, it arises, it exists. And it can move on, like, mm-hmm. and all of these things that come up with us, that's practice. That's like actual practice. It doesn't, cause we don't like to do that. We like to cling to it and make it into I am. And it's like Peggy, like your sister, she maybe at that time might've said, I am a bad mom in the midst of that addiction. And then 2 decades pass and maybe she won't say that anymore. Probably wouldn't say that anymore. Almost definitely, I'm sure, wouldn't say that anymore. And it's like, how long does it serve you to hold on to that? Because really, you don't have to hold on to it. Even if you just did your last, whatever, I never did any drugs, but even if you just injected or snorted or smoked your last bit of methamphetamine, maybe in that moment, you weren't a great mom. But then, you know, maybe in this moment, you're not doing that. So you don't have to hold on to that identity even 1 minute longer. Mm-hmm. Never mind 2 days longer.
Or two decades.
Like, you don't have to. The next moment you can decide and you can communicate a completely different I am.
And see, that's what's so important about the story piece of it, is sharing exactly that. The more, you know, if we had 100 people sitting around right now, I mean, there's 4 of us right now. Mm-hmm. And the energy that you feel off of it, and the way that we're talking through, everybody has different perspectives and we're adding to the conversation, agreeing even at times if we had to disagree, but it's the telling of that story. So no one should suffer alone. Not one single thing. It doesn't matter if you have OCD. It doesn't matter if you try to commit suicide. No one should suffer alone. That's the saddest, most that is, it makes me want to bawl all day long that anyone would suffer any one thing all by themselves. I don't care what it is. Because we have so much more in common than we don't. And, you know, I probably have a lot in common with a gambler and an alcoholic and a bad mom and somebody who doesn't like pets. Let's, you know, oh, it's just good combo, girls.
Yes, absolutely.
This has been really great, Martinet. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you. And we are at the last couple minutes. So I want to thank you, all of you, for being here. And I would like all of you to share where people can reach you in just the next little bit here. Go for it.
You can find me on my website, getthefuckoff.com. Yes. I also host the Get the Fuck Off podcast. There's an asterisk instead of a U in fuck. Apple, Spotify, Audible, Amazon Music, or on my website, getthefuckoff.com.
I love it so much.
Perfect. Alicia.
You can find me at alicialyons.com. I'm also at Mom Support Coach on all the platforms.
Wonderful. And Peggy.
And I'm Peggy Wilms, and my website's allthingswellness.com. And you can find me at peggy@allthingswellness.com if you want to email. Big hugs to you all. Thank you so much. Made my day.
Thank you so much, everyone. This was a lot of fun. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We so appreciate it. You can find me at www.martineemmons.com and martine@martineemmons.com email. And we will see you all next week. Thank you so much for tuning in every Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. And we'll see you all next time.
Thank you for listening to Transformation with Martinet. Did listening today spark a sense of hope and possibility? Hold on to this feeling and tune in every second and fourth Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific for more inspiring conversations with Martinet and her guests. They will show you there is hope and you are right where you need to be. Martinet is dedicated to supporting you right where you are while launching you towards promise, passion, and possibility that leads to the fulfilled life your heart aches for. If you're tired of being stuck, schedule a complimentary consultation with Martinet and get on the exciting path towards the life you want to be living. Visit martineemmons.com and make your appointment today.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.